All right, so one more time, this is for Fresno State Valley Public History Initiative, Preserving Our Stories. My name is Sean Slusser. We are talking to Charles Montgomery today. So I usually just like to start these general, like, tell me a little bit about your family history, like, where you were born, kind of where you grew up.
Okay. Well, I was born here in Fresno, California. And my father is Mexican and my mother is Creole. So we are also Native Americans. My Creole side of the family, we are Choctaw Indian from Louisiana and some sort of Apache from Arizona.
Okay.
And also I have some African blood too. And my grandfather, Charles Edward Montgomery, Dorothy L. Montgomery, they're both from the South. So, yeah, and then my dad's family's from Mexico. But yeah, I was born here and born and raised on the southeast side of Fresno. Man, love that area, right? yeah, but
okay. Anything. Do you know when your family came to Fresno?
My great-grandfather, Nelson Norman, he was a mason, I guess. Like, he was, like, a builder. So, like, he would work on, like, skyscrapers and things like that. So he was, like, he helped with building the Empire State Building. My family went from Louisiana to New York, and I believe they came from New York to Fresno. I guess there was work here at the time, and my grandmother was a homemaker, and they had, I believe, seven children, you know, all daughters and one son, my Uncle George, and yeah, really cool. My Mexican side of the family, I think we've always kind of been here. I think they kind of came from, like, my dad's dad, his family's from Mexico. And then, you know, my dad's mom, they were from Arizona. So, like, just, I don't even know how they got here, man. They just got here, you know?
So you're, both your parents are from Fresno?
Yeah, both of them.
And then both grandparents?
Or? Both grandparents. I think they all migrated here some way.
Okay, yeah. So they started.
Yeah.
Where did your parents, you know, where your parents grew up?
My parents, they grew up on the east side as well, southeast side, yeah. So, yep.
What kind of work did they do?
My dad was a brown fryer, so, like, he didn't really, like, do too much. I mean, you know, odd jobs, I guess. And then my mom, she just was a drug fiend, so there was no work.
Did you have a lot of connection, like, with your family, extended family?
You know, man, I honestly... Is that bad?
No.
Oh, I honestly... I was so spread out because my mom was a drug addict that we were place to place. So the only time I seen my family, I guess, is what I can say is when... We didn't have no place to really, really go, you know, because she leaned on a lot of friends to live with them. And then my father, she just really didn't give my dad a chance to kind of be a provider. Mm-hmm. So we slept a lot downtown on the bus stop, the main bus stop, place to place, I guess her friends, whoever she could mooch off of.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just when she would get too, things would get too heavy, I'd end up either staying with one of my grandmothers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they were all on the southeast side?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, from Butler Park area to First and Tulare, you know, I was just always walking around, like, you know, from Chestnut and Butler all the way to, like, First and Tulare. Nice. So it was pretty far, you know. Think about the radius of that, you know.
Yeah. You said Chestnut and Butler?
Yeah. Okay. You know, Maple and Butler, you know, all the way to First and Tulare. Holmes Playground.
Okay. So what are your memories of, like, Fresno as a youth, a kid?
I mean, you, when I think about it, the only places that I really like could like visualize it right now is just the east side. You know, like born and raised is, I mean, Mosqueda Center, you know, Holmes Playground, you know.
What was the first one?
Mosqueda Center.
Okay.
Mosqueda Center. And it was just a park that I would go to because they gave free lunch, you know, milk, stuff like that. That was my biggest thing, man, you know, like, back then, I mean, we was broke. So, I mean, I really couldn't do nothing. I mean, anything free. Anything that, you know, I could do, like, at the park or something.
Yeah.
You know?
You hear that?
Yeah.
At the time, did you know it was the east side? Or did you have a sense of, like, the broader Fresno area?
Yeah. I knew it was the east side. I mean, kids back then, gangs was a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it didn't matter if he was, like, you know, 9 or 10. You could be banging. It didn't matter.
Right.
And I hate to say it, but, you know, kids grew up way too, like, I would say way too bold, you know?
So what were the other, like, kind of dividing lines of Fresno, like, as a kid? Like, how did you...
Well, like, in Butler Park, you had Daisy Park behind us. You had Caldwell right next to us, Food Town, Cabby Land. And then you had, you know, on the east side right there, just all the apartments around Holmes Playground was just a place where, you know, Raphael Apartments, I used to live there. And I just, man, that was the surrounding areas for me.
Yeah.
You know, and plus my dad was well known around the area. Mm. And, you know, a lot of people knew who Ruben's son was, you know. So.
What was he known for?
I don't know, like some good and just good, like a strong guy, I guess. Like, I don't know, you know, like people felt safe around the guy. He was huge. He was a big man, you know, like, and, you know, like, people looked up to him, I guess.
Yeah. You said he was a brown prider? Was he, like, politically active?
More like brown pride, I guess, would be more like just proud to be Mexican, somewhat gangster, I guess. I don't know, you know, like.
And so your dad's side is Mexican and your mom's side is Creole?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you identify any of those as a kid?
Well, it was really tough to identify with Mexicans because I didn't grow up around them.
Yeah.
My dad was killed, so I didn't grow up around them. I grew up with my black side of the family, my Creole side of the family. And we're kind of mixed. We're all kind of diverse, you know, with that. And so growing up, I just had soul food every day, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's what I identified with. And I identified with what my grandfather told me to identify with. And he was no joke. He was serious.
Yeah. So what was his message to you?
Respect people. You know, don't ever let nobody put their hands on you. And if they ever did, you handle it with this.
Right.
And he was the first man to teach me how to throw my hands.
Okay.
Because dealing with what I had to deal with after my dad passed away, that was the only way I knew to kind of get through Butler Park area, southeast side Fresno, walking home from school. You know, you're walking through different neighborhoods, different streets, 1300 block, 1400 block, you know, fools will sweat you.
Right.
It's what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make this sound like a John Singleton movie or something, but, you know, you really don't realize it until you get older. Like,
right.
You know, I'm just walking down the street, cats are sweating me for what, you know?
Yeah.
It was rough, but my grandfather's message was, you got to work for what you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, I recently heard something about, who do we look up to? Do we look up to ourselves? Do we visualize ourselves becoming something major? Is that what our motivation is? Is that where the drive comes from? And me, no. My drive is coming from the examples of my grandmother and my grandfather who raised me, that's what I'm setting my goals for.
Okay.
And I think that they are the epitome of success, I think. You know, like, they were just worked. They worked.
Yeah. My grandfather, what did they do?
My grandfather was, I think, a welder for Dole. And my grandmother was a nurse for Valley Children's for 30 years until she had some brain aneurysms. Mm. And then my grandfather fell and, broke his back, kind of.
On the job?
Mm-hmm. That's what I want to aspire to be better than.
Yeah.
And my grandpa was always kind of selective on who I used to be around. So he kept me around his nephews, which were just hard as shit.
Yeah.
You know, and they were just like, nobody fucked with my cousin Mike or Richard. And, you know, like, and they're, you know, they're black kids. I mean, when you look at me, you could tell I'm Mexican, but you can tell I'm something else.
Right.
You know, but back to that identifying, and it was just like he put me around people that kept me safe. And because you know you never know, and you learn the hard way sometime,
right?
And that was his message, just to keep me safe.
Did he like identify as black or as Creole?
My grandfather? Yeah, he's black. He's black. Okay. And Blackfoot Indian.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about your grandmother?
Creole, just straight Creole woman.
Yeah.
She's just Creole.
Did those things mean something to you at the time? Did you understand, like, differences?
I mean, when you look at me, you probably think, well, I don't understand the importance of soul food. But I understand what is put into the food. I understand the environment that's happening. You know, being a Mexican, it's kind of rough dealing with other Mexicans because they're like, you know.
Yeah.
And so being in the kitchen with my grandmother, watching her do what she does, talking to me, using certain endearing terms to talk to me, you know. And here's where people, I think, don't understand the endearing side of saying the word nigga or nigger.
Right.
You know, endearment is like a really fine line, I think. You know, and especially with that word, it's rough because she might say, Chale, go wash your hands, nigga.
Right.
Right? And I say that, and it rolls off my tongue as if it's some type of different language, right? But it's an endearing, or wash your hands because I'm ready to feed you.
Right.
You know, and so that's those things that are passed down to me, those things that I kind of implement in who I am today.
Okay.
You know, and, yeah.
Where do they live?
Still live in the same area, Butler Park.
Okay.
You know, my grandmother, I call her my mom, but she just holds on to her house. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of memories are built there. That's where I really started my dance career.
Okay.
You know?
Do they dance or they have any?
Yeah.
Okay.
So culturally, this is why I kind of like, I think my passion for it, for breaking, you know, we would have what we call, our parties would be called Zydeco.
Okay.
Or Zydeco party, right? And we have Zydeco music. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whenever we have a barbecue, like let's just say there's Easter or, you know, around this time, my grandparents loved to barbecue. So, you know, we'd have a Zydeco in the back. My aunts, my uncles, me, you know. And these two people had just the best rhythm. Yeah. That you could possibly think of, you know, and it's just two, you know, Southern folks just getting down together. I mean, and when you think about salsa or you think about like merengue or bachata, blah, 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 right? Zydeco can be just as fluent, right? It could. When you see them step, just as fluent as salsa step, because salsa stepping looks like it's so well put together, especially when you see people dancing together.
Right.
You're like, whoa, how do they do that? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Me and you can go get a salsa cypher right now and just totally mess up, you know? But these people had it, like it was programmed with every step that she took, he took. You know, he was leading her, you know? Okay. And Zydeco's were the best.
Would Zydeco also be like a form of dance?
We just called, the whole party was just called a Zydeco. Okay. You know, like, we danced into Zydeco music. Okay. You know, so, I mean, I really don't know what my parents, what my grandparents would call the actual dance.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you go to, like, a family reunion in, like, Paris, L.A., or back in Lake Charles, Louisiana, you know, you got people with spoons and accordions.
Right.
You know, like, it's wild, man. You know, like, yeah.
Nice. Was there, like, a Creole community here or the other folks?
From what I know, no. You know, like, and that was, like, I think that's an issue, too. It's, like, my grandfather had an issue with that. Like, my grandmother had a probably issue with that. Like, maybe somewhat not, like, racist, but kind of stereotyping. Mm. Like, because when you think about soul food, everybody identifies soul food with just being black folks.
Right. Right.
You know, like, soul food is not just mac and cheese and fried chicken. You know, like, come on now.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So what'd you guys eat?
Jambalaya, dirty rice. I mean, red beans and rice. You know, we had gumbo, you know. We had a crawdad boil, you know. I mean, just, you know, they like to raise their own type of vegetables. I was always in the garden, man, picking weeds. Mm. You know, I guess that was one thing my grandfather implemented for me, too, was learning how to take care of something that's going to nurture you in some way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Did they identify, like, with the black community in Fresno at all? Did they,
Yeah, I mean, Butler Park, like, everybody in Butler Park at the time on Whitney Street is black. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
About what age were you, like, kind of living with them, like?
9 or 10. My dad passed away when I was, like, 7 or 8 years old. So, 10 years old, because my grandmother, my Mexican grandmother, kicked me out.
Yeah.
She kicked me out because I just didn't give a fuck.
Right.
So.
That would have been like your dad's mom?
Yeah, I really didn't care, you know, like, I really started taking things personal.
Yeah.
Like, everything was personal because of how my dad passed away, you know, like, man, I just couldn't stand kids. So I ended up, like, fucking somebody up, and she couldn't deal with me no more, and my grandfather... My dad's dad, Ruben Sr., he didn't really want nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And he was married like three or four times. And so he was a retired sheriff.
Okay.
And so the stories about his ass is, you know, he was just real abusive to my father.
Mm-hmm.
Really abusive man, I guess, because he was abused by his father. You know, like, I don't know. But... No, I didn't really mess with him too much,
okay.
You know, because my black grandfather probably would have put him in his place, you know, like, always, you know, like, the form of, like, discipline back then was, like, whooping the shit out of right. your kids, you know.
Right.
And so, like, even today, like, with my kids, I try to just word myself a little better,
yeah.
You know, because it really is detrimental to how they grow up.
Yep.
And as a parent... You know, you just don't know the mistakes. You think that you're doing right by beating the hell out of them, and you're not.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, I mean, a swat or two for my son because he's so naughty. But that's, like, the last resort for me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because he's smarter than what we think.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You don't have to get into this if you don't want to, but, like, what happened with your dad?
My dad was killed by a drunk driver. He was riding bikes, and he got killed. He got hit. And so... At the time, I was with my drug addict-ass mom. And, you know, I just didn't want to stay with her no more. And so she was in an abusive relationship, and I remember one day she was getting beat. And I just looked at her, and I was like, you know, you're going to deal with this? I'm young, man. I'm 8 years old.
Yeah.
Or something. I'm like, you want to live with this shit? Like, I'm out of here, you know? So I took off, and I went to my dad's mom's house on the east side on Platt Street. And Sixth and Tulare. And I just told him, I was like, Dad, I don't want to live with her no more, man. And he was just like, all right. And then, like, 2 weeks later, he died. So, you know, he got hit. And, you know, man, it just fucking nothing ever just went right after that. You know, like, I had to deal with living with her for a little while longer than I just, or with my grandmother.
Right.
And then she couldn't deal with me. And so my grandfather, she put all my stuff on the side of the road, man. And then my grandfather came to pick me up and was like, you're going to live with me now.
Wow.
I was like, all right.
It's good someone stepped in, though. So where did you go to school this time? Like, what are...
Jackson.
Okay.
Jackson Elementary. And then I finished it out. And I just knew how to get by with schoolwork and shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't really go to school sometimes because my mom had another son with the guy that she was in a relationship with after my dad passed. And I always had to watch him.
Yeah.
So there was times where I wouldn't be in school for like a week, bro.
Wow.
Because like he was 1-2 years old and she was always out getting high.
Yeah.
Fucking around with that methamphetamine bullshit, cocaine, yeah. Probably crack. Always trying to get high.
Yeah. So from Jackson, where'd you go?
Kings Canyon.
Okay.
Middle school. Because I was in that area living in Butler Park. It was either Sequoia or Kings Canyon. So I went to Kings Canyon, and yeah, loved it there.
Yeah? What was good about it?
I was somebody.
Yeah?
Finally, for once in my life, I was somebody, and like, my family, I went to school with my cousins, so like, I was somebody, you know what I mean? And nobody fucked with me, and finally one day, somebody did, and my cousin Richard, I was sitting next to my cousin Richard, man, and this black dude slapped me in the back of the neck, and he called me something, a brown mayate or something, and my cousin Richard was making fun of me. He was like, I'm going to tell your papa, I'm going to tell your grandpa that you let this fool hit you, and I was like, nah, man, don't do that, and he was like, well, then tell him something. And so my cousin Mike, the older one, he's over there looking at me, and he's like, and I'm like, and this guy is kind of taller than me.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, man, you know, you should never hit me, man. And he was like, I'll hit you if I want to.
Right.
And so he was like, I don't even know why you hanging out with us. I was like, I don't know why you hanging out with us. I was like, this is my family, you know?
Right.
He was like, that ain't your family. And I was like, and then my cousin Richard was just like, you don't know shit. And so I got up off the benches, and all the kids from Butler Park area, especially Whitney Street, I remember one girl. Her name was Lynetta.
Okay.
Lynetta Jones. I looked up to her brother for so long because he could do a backflip off a gate and roller skates, like off a fence,
okay.
And skate backwards. So I looked up to her brother, man. And she was like, Charles, what, you better. And I'm like, and so we squared up and I just caked him. Bop. And I mean, I left this dude just laying on the benches, man. It was like some Rocky shit.
Okay.
You know, and went home and I got in trouble.
Right.
My grandfather was like, what happened? And I was like, he hit me in the back of the neck. What was you doing? And I was like, nothing. I just was talking to Richard. And he was like, where'd you hit him at? And I said, I hooked him in the temple. A right hook. Bap. And he goes, you grounded. I was like, but you told me, you know,
right.
Like, yeah, but other than that, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Kings Canyon, like, is it in that same neighborhood, or is it?
Yeah, that's off of Kings Canyon and, or off of Tulare. I think it's Tulare and Willow. Tulare and Minnewalk. Yeah, Tulare and Willow, okay. Something like that.
But it sounds like it's pulling people from, like, other neighborhoods.
Yeah, other neighborhoods,
okay.
Yeah.
What were the, like, roughly, what were the demographics, you think?
Asians. Asians, black, and Mexicans. Not a lot of white people at all. I don't even remember that many white people.
Yeah.
And it was just, at the time, I guess, us minorities.
Right.
And, you know, back then, especially seventh grade was kind of rough because it was gangs. Straight up Bulldogs, Crips, Bloods.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to be a fucking Crip. Everybody wanted to be a Blood. Everybody wanted to be a Bulldog. And they had their circles.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And there was like people that were like kind of like jocks, but kind of like, you know, I don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? I couldn't bring that shit home. You know, I had to be a strong ass kid, which was like deal with all of that without identifying with that.
So what does that look like on a day-to-day basis? Like,
fucking
negotiating,
crap, man.
That?
here. Like, oh, this person's going to fight this person. It builds up and it builds up, and they finally start throwing hands like grown-ass men. You know what I mean? Kids actually fought like grown men, man.
What high school?
I went to Roosevelt.
Okay.
Roosevelt High School.
Was Roosevelt more or less the same kind of demographics? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Same shit, man.
What was Roosevelt like?
Well, you know, like in eighth grade, I was always hanging out with my buddy Pablo. And he was actually my first breaking teacher. But he was, I met him when my father passed away.
Okay.
So, you know, it was kind of rough because he's not here no more.
Right.
But Pablo was also a Butler Park boy like me. Mm. And so I went to junior high with him. I left him out only because, like, you know, just in case we wanted to get to the breaking part.
Yeah, we'll get there.
You know, but Pablo was very pivotal for my life.
Okay.
Because the things that my dad left me with, Pablo picked up.
What's that?
Like tumbling, like flips, and just acrobatic type stuff. You know, like he was just one of the most well-rounded, talented kids I've ever met. And he was the talk of the town in Butler Park because he was so gifted, you know.
Was your dad into that stuff?
Yeah. My dad could do it all. He was like a Renaissance dude, man.
Okay.
Renaissance man. Like he was a triathlete when he was a kid. Like, so yeah, bro.
So you meet Pablo in school or in the neighborhood?
I met Pablo shortly after my dad died. I was on my grandmother's roof jumping into their little doughboy swimming pool.
Okay.
And then I seen this little ass guy, you know, doing flips. And he had like a little trampoline. And he was running and jumping on this trampoline. And I was like, hey. He was like, what? And I was like, hey, man, can you teach me how to do that?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, come over. I think it was like the week after my dad passed or something. And I was like, all right, cool. And so I ran over there. And he had lived like four houses down.
Yeah.
Three houses down. And he was like, hey, yeah, come through the back. And I was like, all right, cool. And so he showed me one thing that he could do. And he did, like, he ran and did a front flip.
Okay.
Off the trampoline. And I was like, oh my God, man. I was like, my dad, I go, he taught me how to do that, like, but not like that. And I go, he showed me like back handsprings.
Okay.
And then Pablo was like, oh, I could do that too, you know? And so I was like, all right, cool. So he ran and he showed me, like, he ran and he did like this little half twist and, you know, jumped, you know, backwards, bam. Okay. You know, and I was like, oh wow, right? And so I had never did one going forward. And so I ran and bam, I jumped and I landed on my back. And I lost my breath. I mean, I was so embarrassed because I started crying. And and I was like, and he was like, hey, man, he picked me up. Mm-hmm. He just like grabbed me and he's like, hey, man, I never seen anybody just go for it.
Right.
He goes, I didn't believe you. I didn't believe you were going to do it. And I go, I was like, get off me. You know, I was like, I could fucking do this, you know? Fucking fell on my back again. Mm. And he was like, look, man, let me show you. And I was like, and then I ended up like kind of like being frustrated with him.
Right.
And he was like, look, he's like, I'm going to show you. You don't want me to take you down. Meaning like wrestle me.
Right.
And I was like, I can box. You know, being a kid, I was trying to show off.
Right.
And he was like, I'm still going to grab you. He's like, I'm going to show you though. What do you want? You want me to take you down or you want to learn?
Right.
And I go, I want to learn. And so he showed me and then I did it. I did it.
Right.
I landed on my feet, man. And I was just...
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So how does that... Where does that go from there?
Just became best friends.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where we called each other brothers. My cousins respected him. My grandfather respected him. My grandmother loved him.
Yeah. What's his background?
Filipino, Mexican, white.
So at that time, is are you guys dancing, or this is just like acrobatic?
8 years old, 9 years old. Yeah. Mosqueda kids, Butler Park kids, man. Yeah. Just living in the hood, getting free lunch.
Yeah.
Playing stickball, I guess, baseball or some shit. You know, like that's what we did.
So when does the dance start? Like, where do you...
Junior high. Kind of. Eighth grade, kind of.
Okay.
I saw Pablo do windmills. Mm. I said, where the fuck you learn that, man? And he was like, oh, my older brother Ruben and his friends. And I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so I just followed suit.
Okay. Were they doing it as dance, or were they doing it as just like...
Nobody knew. They okay. just called it breaking. Breaking.
Okay.
You know, the term b-boy for us culturally, like the lag part, we were just lagging. It's okay. Fresno compared to like the Bronx or some
right.
shit. We weren't catching that.
So where do you think they saw it? Like his brothers and stuff?
I mean, the movie like Flashdance, Break-In, Beach Street. I mean, of course you had like Asian b-boys, like, you know, like Laos b-boys and Hmong b-boys, breaking breakers, I guess. But they were just like, they didn't really have a lot of knowledge about what was going on, you know, bits and pieces. And back then you had people forming crews, you know, like, because of what they see from like the TV or the movies or something, you know, like you got people forming their own crews. You know, and so, yeah, I mean.
So this is like
92,
okay.
93.
And so when you see the windmills, did you know it was connected to dance, or is just
yeah,
something cool?
I knew it was connected to some type of dancing, but I had saw that, I think those type of things, like I saw that from like Danny from New Kids on the Block or something like that. I saw it on like, where else did I see it at? Alfonso Ribeiro.
Okay.
Remember him?
Yeah, yeah.
Silver
Spoons?
Yeah, like I would see stuff like that, but you know, being that you're somewhat like a rough dude, like,
yeah.
you know, I grew up playing baseball and shit, you know, like,
okay.
Come on, man, like, and so when I saw Pablo do that, the whole dance side of breaking didn't really appeal to me. The more athletic side appealed to me, you know, because that's what that is, you know.
Yeah. So how does that go from there? So you see the windmills, I'm assuming you try to learn it.
And yet again, I was like, can you teach me? And he was like, you gonna listen? And he was like, yeah. I love fighting, man. You know, and Pablo knew that.
Yeah.
You know, I loved, back when I was a kid, I loved the fucking box. Like, I just fucking fight you. Like, you know, you don't disrespect me, man. Like, I guess it's a sort of like way of saying discernment. I don't know, discernment or something like. Where, like, my grandfather demanded a type of respect. My grandmother, demanded this. And so, like, with my friends, I demanded it, too.
Yeah.
You know, and I would not give it to you unless you showed me that.
Right. So how does your experience with the dance kind of progress from there?
Well, being that, you know, you got to be somewhat hard-headed to be great.
Yeah.
And I just watched Pablo, and I watched a few of the Asian b-boys around the area, and I picked and choose on who I really, you know, took to.
Right.
And but Pablo had to be the main one. You know, he was really good. I mean, there was like some other guys like Flip, Angelino Castillo. He's the one that created my crew.
What's your crew?
Climax Crew.
Okay.
I'm one of the creators too. I'm one of the founders, but the one that actually gave the initial idea of getting out of Smurfs and DIS. Not getting out, but just kind of forming something that was more of that we were going to just not wait for anybody. We were going to take initiative to go and just battle LA, San Francisco, like whoever, you know, San Jose, anyone. And this is what Flip wanted to do. He wanted to make a name. Because when you think about it, people were only identifying with the Hmong B-Boys at the time. Because Hmong B-Boys, that's what was the majority.
So who is identifying with them? Like, who knew, like, well, where does their rep come from?
Like, you mean, like, the Smurfs and stuff like that?
And even, like, how did you know about it? Like,
through some of the gangsters, like ACs, like Asian Crips, mm-hmm. that lived across the way from me, like in the next house across the way. Ali, Fang, Nye, Peter. Their cousin Birdie was a part of a group called Bums Crew. And Bums Crew was a branch off of like DIS, Smurfs, No Wizards. But Bums was like probably like the biggest crew at the time.
Okay.
And then Smurfs was like on the up and coming. DIS was on the up and coming.
So this is early 90s.
Early 90s.
Okay. By the time you had heard of them, had they been around for a minute? Or
yeah, like they had two guys in a part of their crew, Mao and Chan. Mao and Chan were like the first dudes to do some really immaculate shit, like flare into handstands, like some shit you see on the gymnastics world, yeah. right? And you know, who wouldn't want to do a flare into a handstand? If I were to say, here, Sean, I'm going to give you this power, you would do it.
Right.
You'd be like, I'm going to do it everywhere, right?
Right?
And so when people start hearing about that, they just want to do it, right? And they take to it. And so...
where would you see it, like physically?
You know, that's the funny thing, is... it was all about like small business is word of mouth,
yeah.
right? That's the best form of business,
right?
So when you think about how the B-Boy community grew, it was word of mouth. And so if you love something that much and you hear about a story, you could create the visualization inside your head.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, we can read a book word for word,
right?
But it might not be what they take or what they take,
right.
It's what I take.
Right.
Like my idea of Star Wars, like, you know, some of the books that are non-canon no more,
right?
You know, I'm still like, oh man, what would that be like, you know? Yeah. So that's how it was.
Were there actual physical spaces that you could go?
Yeah, you could go. I mean, it's very rare when you catch these guys like in action.
Okay.
Especially like you're 14 years old. Yeah. Your grandparents, my parents weren't gonna let me go nowhere.
Right.
So whenever I had a chance to go somewhere, yeah, bro. Like,
you know. So where would those spaces be? Like,
I guess they would get down like at Holmes Playground, Romaine's. Melody Park, yeah, from what I know, people's houses, you know.
So then even like Pablo, is he plugging into that, or is
yeah.
he still learning from his
because
brothers?
His older brother was plugged into that,
okay.
that older generation. Mm. But that's what I have to say about Pablo and Flip, man, is they saw what these dudes were doing, especially like the Smurfs and the Bums, and they were just like naturals, man.
Yeah.
So like you have Cal Ripken, then you have Jeter.
Right.
Cal is still my favorite.
Okay.
Because there's just something about Cal that was, you know, fucking ballsy.
Right.
You know, and then you got Jeter, like, playboy.
Right.
Smooth. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't about the cause.
Right.
Or it was about the cause. And now, like, when you see people like Jeter, it's about the money.
Right.
And about the women.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And so, hey, things change. But that's how I feel that Pablo and Flip were. They were just the Cal Ripken of the shit, you know?
So, like... that Smurfs generation, are they leaving Fresno? Are they like going to battle, or is that
they? No, and see, that's the thing. Smurfs and DIS and all them, like, great, great B-boys, man. Don't get me wrong. Like, you got Bone, Boone, really dope, fast, power move type dude. Everybody was dynamically based. Yeah. So like you have La Jong, LA, you had Keebla, you had Tai Yang, you had Slow, Johnny, Chucky, X, Pow, Flip, Pablo, then you had me.
Okay.
But I was part of the younger brother crew, like DIS crew.
Yeah.
A lot of these dudes were amazing. They were like local heroes. But we just, we loved breaking so much, I don't think they knew how much we loved it.
Yeah.
And so what we did was, is we just practiced and practiced and practiced together, me, Pablo, and Flip. Because it goes back to that, like, you're not Hmong, so fuck you.
Right.
Regardless if you're down with us or not. And that's kind of how it felt.
So where is that sentiment coming from? Like,
it just comes from because, you know, like, they were the men, bro. They were the men.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when you're the man sometimes, you don't see other shit than what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's why I stay in here.
Right.
That's why I'm always working.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to let somebody just step on me like that. You know, or I'm not going to be blind to anything. So, like, it rooted from that where these guys, they would pick and choose when they want Pablo or Flip to battle or something.
Okay. And so is that like a Hmong thing? Or do you think that's like like B-boy thing?
I kind of think so. I don't think it's an older B-boy thing. I think it was just, yo, you're Mexican. You know what I mean? We don't want nobody other than, you know, Hmong B-boys being the premier around here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it still goes like that today. But, you know, if I was not doing what I was doing, you would not hear shit from these dudes.
Right.
I'm in their mouth because I'm in their mouth.
Right.
And, you know, like with Pablo, they started to take to him a little more because he was just getting good every day.
Yeah.
So, like, let's say, for example, think of Pablo as, like, getting a raise every day.
Mm.
A dollar every day.
Right.
So this fool already maxes out. He's making 75 an hour. That's how they saw him.
Right.
Because he was that goddamn good.
Right.
And so he was doing things that it took them probably a few years to do, and he was doing it in, like, a few months.
Yeah.
And so they would put him on, and then Flip got kind of tired of that because Flip was pretty unique. He was just as good as Pablo, but nobody really identified with him because, like, he was just real Mexican, you know? And so Flip said, you know what, man, I got respect for these goons. They put me on. They you know, they took care of me, but I'm going to do my own thing. And so he asked me and Pablo to get down with him.
Nice.
And I still stayed in DIS, but at the same time, like, I was like, yeah, Pablo's my teacher, of course.
Right.
I'm going where you go.
What does DIS stand for?
Dancing in Style. Okay. That's what it was called. I mean, you know, think about the acronyms for everything. It was just all like, that don't even make no damn sense. Like, you know what I mean? Like, dancing in style. Like, yeah.
So, you're learning from Pablo. Are you also learning from, like, that Hmong generation or, like, those people?
Me, personally?
Yeah.
It's a little different. It's a little different. Personally, I didn't want to learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Is because they were pretty, like, they were assholes. They had ego problems.
Yeah.
And so I was like, knowing I had this fire, I was like, I respect you, but I'm going to fucking smoke you.
Right.
And a lot of them would talk.
Yeah.
A lot of them put me down. And a lot of them made me feel less than Pablo.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them made me feel shitty.
Yeah.
Especially L.A. Like, he made me feel like a piece of shit. But you know what? One day he had said something smart to me in high school, and I was like, I was smoky, bro.
Yeah.
And he was just like, what? And I was like, I could do things that you think you wish you can do.
Mm.
And he didn't believe me, and then I had to smoke his ass.
Yeah.
And that was when I knew that, you know, don't ever, ever count yourself out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's when I started to become somebody. And then the talks of Charles getting in Smurfs was you know, and I was like, nah, I'm already getting, doing my thing, you know, like. So
when you're in DIS, are you, like,
and
active,
the
are you
battling? Yeah, I'm active.
Like,
and the reason, here's why I stood down with DIS was because Slow Kong was the leader of it. And my crew DIS at the time, with, like, Tai Yang, Pops, Chow Mein, a few other people, they really treated me with respect and they cared about me, you know, and I would never ever like lose faith to that, you know, like I'm still rep that. I'm gonna get that tatted on me, you know, like because that's my roots. Okay. And Slo always treated me like that's Charles, man. He's gonna be great.
Yeah.
Not one time did he ever say that I was gonna be anything less. And I really appreciate that because I taught his little brothers.
Yeah.
I got the opportunity to teach his little brothers when Slo's family actually is a big reason why we have breaking in Fresno, period. You got KMC, you got his older brother Johnny, you got Slo himself. These guys actually were traveling to San Jose and back.
Yeah.
These were the ones that were traveling. And so everybody else was just like big talk around here, but...
How much older are they than you?
Than me? Probably about 3 years, 2 years? But it's just kind of, it wasn't that big of a gap, but it's kind of...
Yeah, it means something when you're that young.
Yeah.
And so at that stage, when you're in that crew, like what is like an everyday, like are you battling? Are you going out?
Oh, dude, if you're in DIS, nobody steps to you. If you're in Smurfs, nobody's going to step to you. That has to be a plan, like a fight.
Okay.
Like if somebody, if somebody wanted to battle me, it was very rare. And so it was like, you know, we would get together like maybe on a special weekend. We'd find out, hey, they're breaking over here today. We get a phone call. And so we ended up showing up at like Melody Park or something.
Okay.
And battling out over there against like other upcoming people. And this is when I found out about the Wizards, like, you know, in like 93 or 92 or something like that. But, or no, 93, 94, something like that. And these were like, they were like a Clovis-based crew. From what I could remember, Lou is from Clovis. So I think he went to Buchanan High School. The other creator of that crew, his son is in our crew now.
Okay.
But you would think that, you know, he'd be a wizard or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, anything that identifies with Climax, they kind of stay away from, which they should. You know what I mean? Because we just have a broader understanding of things, but it's whatever.
So, if you're not having a lot of battles, what does being in the crew mean, like, kind of on a day-to-day basis? Are you just, like, practicing, or...?
Yeah, man, just getting better.
Yeah.
And it just got to the point where we just, I followed Flip and Pablo, and when we did that, we grew tremendously.
Okay.
I'm talking about 5-6 times over of what these dudes were doing. So that Flare 90 I talked about, that Flare to handstand, we could do that back-to-back, like, 5 times. But we were pushing it. We were investing our time into it by, like, looking for other people that could do it.
Right. Just to kind of fill in the gaps then, in that kind of DIS stage, like, where are you guys practicing?
Garage.
Like people
parks. Like Mosqueda Center. Like, yeah. Homes.
And, like, when you, at this stage, when you guys are going to the parks, is it indoors or outdoors? Are you getting access to the gym?
Indoor, outdoor, the grass, like we would dance on the street, like on the sidewalk, like any chance that we got, wherever we were.
Okay.
It didn't matter, man. The canvas, we went for it.
And so then the other question I would have from that early period is, from the moment you see the windmills, Pablo's doing that, when do you start connecting the dots, like this is breaking, this is what I want to identify with? Like, if you didn't recognize it initially, when does that kind of...
Pablo showed me, because I've never seen movies. Like, you know, my grandparents, they didn't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, Pablo showed me breaking.
Okay.
And then he showed me the Beat Street battle, like, later.
Yeah.
But he showed me breaking, and he talked to me about this movie called The Pilot. And it was like, I don't know, it was with a legendary b-boy named Ozrock was in it. He was like the bad guy in it or something.
Okay.
But,
did they actually dance?
Yeah, he was dope. Like, Ozrock was dope, you know, but the pilot was like some girl.
Okay.
Who was the girl? She was like a black actress. Not Lisa Bonet. Somebody that kind of looked like her.
Okay.
I forgot who it was, but Pablo was always talking to me about this movie, and he was like, showed it to me, some girl doing head spins and stuff. That was when I got my first taste of like hip hop, I guess. I mean, I knew hip hop music, right. You know, West Coast.
Right.
You know, like, you had the DOC was big in Butler Park.
Really?
Listen to DOC, yeah. Okay. The Doc. You know what I mean? And you hear all the cats, you know, in Butler Park, like, their cars, the beat was just blasting. Right, you right. know what I mean? Of course, you have, like, the Street Jams albums with, like, Lisa the Coat Jam or something. You have, like, you know...
Freestyle.
You know what I'm saying? That's what a lot of, like, music was for the breakers of B-Boys back then.
Okay.
It was just freestyle music, you know?
So when did you, like... Do you remember, like, was there a moment when you're like, I'm a breakdancer, I'm a b-boy, like when you kind of took on that identity? Or at least, even if it's, or just kind of recognize that's what you were doing?
Yeah, I guess. Like, I mean, like a battle, you mean? Like,
I'm just curious in that transition, or like, you see someone doing windmills, and like, oh, that looks kind of cool. Like, where's that journey where, like,
here's
part of this culture?
I think, because Flip to me was the man as well. He's the one that broke racial barriers, I believe. You know, being the first Mexican involved with the All Mong B-Boy crew that really didn't get recognized. They passed him up so many times. And I kind of thought that to myself, I was like, well, maybe I should just kind of be an ass some way to him. And I end up disrespecting him some type of way. And he fucking put me in my place. He just smoked me.
Yeah.
And he was like, your turn. But see, he was always, they were always so cool with me because they knew that I would fuck him up.
Right.
But he got my respect by beating me the right way.
Right.
Because if my grandfather found out that I was a poor sport, I'd get my ass kicked.
Right.
And that's something I don't want. And so Flip just put me in my place, and then he was just like, you know what, man? He's like, I know you're a rough guy. He goes, but I love this. And I want to see you get good. And I was like, he's all, just listen, man. You got this. And I was like, and so ever since that day, I knew that I could be a Flip. I could be a Pablo.
Right.
I could be somebody to be revered.
Okay.
Especially by getting the respect from these dudes that way. I was like, you know what, you're right. You know, Charles, sit the fuck down, man. Go train, you know, practice.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so gung-ho about this. I mean, look, man, we're in a gym. Like,
right.
You know, like, I'm ready to go, you know?
So when does Climax officially form? You know?
1995. In 1995, we entered a battle together in Madera.
The three of you, or?
Just the three. Well, Flip was injured. I forgot to name a few different people, Ignacio Haro and Alex Flores, Pablo's little brother. They didn't, Pablo's little brother and Flip didn't battle with us. Pablo's little brother was just in it for the ladies.
Okay.
You know, Ignacio was in it for the fame.
Yeah.
Me and Pablo were in it for the long haul. Flip was in it for the long haul, but he had a tailbone issue. And, like, he had two cysts in his wrist that he never knew about until like 12 years later.
Wow.
Until the doctor cut him open and found him.
Man.
But he's like, his wrists were really bad.
Yeah.
After a while. And so we entered in Madera. We had Ignacio's mom take us to this battle.
What's in Madera? Like,
exactly. What's in Madera? There was some breaking battle that we found out about. And it was like at nighttime. And we thought it was the biggest shit ever, you know? And
right.
We end up going and... We end up entering a crew battle with three people, and it was like 10-on-3, and we battled Smurfs. And we did really well, but we lost.
Okay.
We lost, man, and we didn't take it to the heart. We actually... We were so like fuck this, like we could beat these guys.
Right.
We went home and we practiced 2 times a day. Mm-hmm. Sore, tired. And then we got our chance to battle him our freshman year. Our sophomore year, excuse me, sophomore year. Beginning of sophomore year, there was another battle at lunchtime. And some type of radio station came out.
At Roosevelt?
and they put out like cardboard on the stage, and Smurfs was up there breaking, and Flip was like, hey, he's like, you ready, man? I was like, I'm ready. And we just stepped to him. And Pablo just took charge that day. I'm talking about our instincts were so good that there was cracks in the stage and we still could do shit.
Right.
And that was like my day where like I really got a chance to shine, and man, we put them down. And it was like an ending of an era.
Okay.
Like something new was about to happen.
And so would they have been like seniors?
No. Some of them were like juniors.
Okay.
Yep. And then some of them didn't even graduate, man. Some of them were gangsters too.
And just showed up at the school?
Yeah, same dudes that we looked up to, we battled them.
Yeah.
We battled Boone, we battled L.A., Chucky. And it's sad because, you know, like, I had love for these dudes, man. But when it came to wanting to be great, you can't be great if you don't battle the greats.
Right.
That's like saying, like, Fash is great because what? He's great because he's got Nas behind him. You know, he's got Aaron behind him. I mean, who does Aaron have behind him? He has, like, different producers, you know? Like, Aaron put up a post about who the other day? I forgot. Like, Ninth Wonder or something like that. You know, like, that's how you grow. It's like being around great people. And so we knew that to be great, we had to beat these guys, man. Yeah. Long story short.
Okay. And so, like, what happens to the crew from there?
We were the new.
Yeah.
We were the best. We beat Smurfs.
Okay.
We beat Smurfs that day, and we had a neutral crowd, and we won. I'll never forget that day, man. You know, certain moves were so big, and I was doing them.
Yeah.
I'm like 5'10",
yeah,
bigger than all these guys.
Yeah.
Smashing.
You're going into, like, the practices and the battles, what's your, like, source material? Like, what are you trying to, like, work off of, emulate, improve? In other words, what are you seeing, like, and what are you trying to, like...
So, like, at this point, after we beat them, right, that's great, because we got a chance to go to L.A. after that,
okay,
to the Radiotron. Mm. And that's where we saw the melting pot of what hip-hop is, man. You know?
Yeah.
I'm, like, 16 years old. Pablo's with me, man. We got to see Little Caesar and the Air Force crew. We got to see, like, Master Movements. We got to see, you know, some of the West Coast Rocksteady guys. Like,
did you know them going in?
No. I'm from Fresno. Like, I'm like, oh, crap, you know? Like, I don't know these dudes, you know? And
so your notion of, like, B-boy world at that time is...
just Hmong people.
Like, okay, local
stuff. Like, Asian people. Like, that was it. But then this is where I started to find out more about the Filipino community as well. When you think about that, like, the California B-boy history, the Filipino community is huge. They have some of the most greatest legendary B-boys of all time, especially coming out of the West Coast. And that's when I was like, and then that was another thing to reach for.
In a general sense, can you characterize, like, what was different about the dance you saw, or like style? Like, what was the kind of main differences coming
out? Music was different at Radiotron.
Okay.
People were not just dancing to, like, looking for the perfect beat and play at your own risk. They were dancing to, like, I mean, you would hear, like, 93 Till Infinity, right? Know the Ledge, you know? Juice. I mean, what else will we hear? The Zulu War Chant.
Okay.
I mean, shit. More like Nas.
Okay.
Right? That's when I, like, fell in love with, like, different MCs. Like, I'm starting to understand, like, the MC side.
Right.
You know, I'm like, oh, shit, DJs, right?
Is that, like, an exclusive B-Boy spot, or they're like
Radiotron?
Yeah, or they're like at Housers the time, and stuff? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you had all kinds of like freestyle dancers, poppers, like you could see a plethora of poppers, you know, like lockers, and just people just freestyling. Yeah. Man, dude, like you just in everywhere. And so you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And so this is where, like, you know, we're starting to dance a little more. Yeah. You know, like the Top Rock's not so basic. Like, you know, this runaround step that people had. It was like, you know, an actual crossover Indian steps. You know, like taking that two-step and making it look fucking fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you, like, building with those people? Or are you meeting them and, like, talking about the stuff? Or?
That's funny because... Form-wise, on what me and Pablo could do, L.A. took to us. We were more of like, when you looked at us break, you knew that these guys, like us, we worked on our stretch. And so we had people approach us like, who the fuck are you? Because at the time, there was two Filipino dancers, Jazzy J and Wicked, and they were known for their power moves.
And they're out of L.A.?
They were out of the Bay Area.
Okay.
San Francisco. But they were so well known that they had won the Radiotron like two times already. Okay. Me and Pablo specifically went to Radiotron to battle them because we knew we could do what they did.
Yeah.
And see, that's the problem about this area today is you don't respect us for who we are, and I don't appreciate that because we set out to battle the best, to become the best.
Right.
But we earned something that day. We earned respect. I mean, Little Caesar himself, you know, from the world famous LA or Air Force crew.
Right.
And then you had like Cujo, world famous now. You had like Ace and the Mass Movement crew. You had like Iron Monkey. You had all these dudes like, who are you?
Right.
I mean, because we're just killing it, man.
Yeah.
You know, Flair 90, Flair Windmill Halo, Flair Windmill 90, Flair Headspin, yeah. Just like all these guys, but putting it together.
Yeah.
From Fresno? Ask anybody from LA that was there at Radiotron 5, yeah. And they'll tell you, you know, like, ask Cujo, you know, call him up, I'll give you his number, you know, 818-749-0805, that's his number, call Ace, and, you know, maybe you should do that, because that story... Their version of that story, like Ace was in a room and he was like, who the fuck is that? You know, and like the way he tells me the story is just crazy. Because you don't see yourself like that, but the right. way, you know, the way he, and he's like the man. You know, he's just like, wow, Charles, like you guys were killing it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like we just took it all in that day.
Okay. Does that change your conception of like B-boying?
Yep.
So what's
started to see more videos. I started to get more connections, okay. And link up with people. And we started to understand the dance more. That it was like, you know, there's actual foundation to this dance.
Yeah.
There's a, like, what can we say? A syllabus somewhat.
Okay.
You know, there's somewhat it's like a language.
Yeah.
You have your basic fundamentals that you need to know to really earn the title as a B-boy, right? Because truthfully, this is a dance.
Right.
And that's something that we really didn't understand. We thought that the break dance was what we were doing. Just I like guess that's what we
acrobatics.
Were doing. Yeah. But, you know, later on and as I kept doing this, I'm like, you know, like I didn't really have any type of real teachers. Like me and Pablo didn't have like Crazy Legs, Ken Swift. We didn't have none of those guys at the time. You know, and if the irony in that, you give birth to us but you don't help us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you see what I'm saying? But you criticize us.
Right.
And so it was tough. Because we love the music, man. You know, like KRS-One, boom, bap, original rap. Like right. When I started to hear that stuff, I started to feel like more of like a part of the culture, not just a b-boy. I started to feel like, yo, like you knew Charles like was a he braked,
but you also know him. He's involved with the hip-hop culture now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm 16 years old. Like, I'm living that hip-hop life.
Before that, what do you guys dance to?
Just the freestyle music.
Yeah.
You know, Flip, though, actually introduced us into, like, Wu-Tang. Mm. And he was more of, like, and I you know, I actually love Common in eighth grade.
Okay.
Can I Borrow a Dollar? That album. I just bought that album off the strength, man.
Okay.
Because I wanted to be different from my Uncle Joe listening to DOC. Right. So I found Common's album for like $5. And I bought that. And then also in ninth grade, 10th grade, I got Resurrection.
Okay.
And I fell in love with Resurrection. Then I fell in love with the Far Side Bizarre album, I think it was.
Bizarre Ride.
Yeah. And then they had a title on that. They had a song on that album called Return of the B-Boy. B-Boy.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, this, they're talking about us, Pablo. We listened to it. And he was like, yeah. And then we just started, like, trying to top rock to it.
Yeah.
It was all bad. So.
Did you see those things connected initially?
They started connecting.
Okay.
It was through the music, because it's always through the music, right?
Yeah.
Through the music is when we started to connect. And then the more that we hooked up with people from out of town, we saw what they were listening to like freestyle, fellowship,
yeah.
More of like KRS.
Were people breaking for that, though?
Yeah, dude. When you think about it, like AC alone too. Like you could, like, because we had a different way of like moving to the music now.
Yeah.
So now we started to see more footwork. We started to see more tops. You know, we started to see the dots here and like the lines that connected. You know, then you start digging in deeper and you start finding the breaks, like Babe Ruth and the Mexican, and you know, like, damn. Then you start, you know, Jill Scott Heron. You know what I mean? You start digging into this stuff, man.
That's interesting. So it almost sounds like you guys are kind of going like backwards.
Backwards.
It's like if the original folks are like finding the breaks, then dancing.
Right.
You guys are dancing, and then like, oh, like this is the origin.
Yep. And so, you know, like, yeah. And I just, man, I fell in love with some of this stuff, like Rock Creek Park. Oh, man, I don't know. I can kind of go on and on about that, but you kind of see where I'm going, right?
Yeah. So did you guys bring that back to Fresno?
Yeah. Let me say something though. I've always had a love for James Brown because it was played in my house.
Yeah.
So like I forgot what song it was. Get Down with My Girlfriend.
Okay.
I forgot what my grandfather used to, you know. He was a stepper, my grandfather, so he was a stepper, so he was step,
yeah.
You know, like, come out the room, like, stepping, you know, like,
okay.
They had an 8-track player, we had, you know, Super Bad, you know,
okay.
Give It Up, Turn It Loose, we had those things at our house, so, like, that was just, Ohio Players was always playing in the house, so, like, funk music type stuff,
right.
I always was around,
okay.
So when I heard James Brown, I was like, oh, shit,
right.
My grandparents listened to this
okay.
shit, you know, like, Super Bad,
yeah.
Man, and I remember like watching Rocky with my grandfather, and he'd be like, yo, check out this part with Apollo Creed coming out, you know, like, remember when Apollo,
yeah, coming to America,
yeah,
whatever.
Living in America, you know, and like, that was a part of hip hop to me, you know what I'm saying,
yeah.
Like, and so when I heard it at the Radiotron, just, make it funky, you know,
yeah.
Like, that's some shit, like, people thought we were weird in high school listening to that.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Golly. But you had kids just trying to rush to be older some way.
Right.
Listening to like Montel Jordan or some shit. Whack.
Did your grandparents watch you dance?
They didn't like it at
yeah.
first. Nah, bro. Like, my grandfather was like, he beat my ass because I got caught. He told me not to dance. He told me not to mess around at Pablo's with that. If I do anything, just play basketball and come home.
What was their objection?
They didn't like that it was affiliated with so many gangs
okay.
at the time in the 90s. And my grandfather was like, you know, always just expressing to me how, you know, he would he don't want to lose me. Right. You know, he's already lost his daughter to drugs and shit.
Yeah.
And he's not going to lose his grandson that carries his name.
Right.
And then one day he I told him I was going somewhere, and I was at Pablo's breaking, and he drove by with my grandma, and he got out the car, and he's like, get your ass in the car. And Pablo was like, I'm sorry, man. And I was like, all right, I love this, and I'm going to tell him why. And I got in the car, and he smacked me. Pow! He goes, don't you ever lie to me again. Then I got home, and I didn't raise my voice to him, but I was like, can I talk to you? And he was like, yeah, what? And I was like, I really like it. I'm really good.
Right.
I'm good. I'm not a gangster. I'm none of that. Yeah. You know, like, he was like, you're fucking lying to me. And he's all, let me see how good you are. And I blew him away.
Okay.
And he was like, you sure? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you want to go back over there? And I was like, you want to watch us? Pablo's dad's there. And he was like, I'll watch.
All right.
He sat and watched for a while.
Nice.
And now he's just proud of me.
Yeah.
Been to like 12 countries, like, you know, taught so many people. Like, he saw me on TV one day and was like, that's my grandson. Like, you know, like, you know what I mean? So.
Do you think they saw any, like, connection? Like, between that dance and kind of like their
they lived through my grandfather's, he actually was just like knew more about the culture before I did. My aunt, or you know, his daughter, his youngest daughter, was like a house dancer, like, so you know, New Jack Swing, like the New Jack Swing era,
right?
You know, where people were like bop bop, you know, dancing like that. You know, you can see Rosie Perez like dancing and Do the Right
Fly
Thing.
Girls,
Fly Girl shit, right? My aunt was into the Fly Girl era.
Okay.
And so like being, and so being kind of like, you know, a Fly Girl type dancer, my grandfather knew what's up, but he knew what was up with like Kool G Rap, you know, Kumo D.
Okay.
You know, those type of dudes. And so he busted out these records. Wait, you remember that album that Kumo D had? And he was just on the album, he looked like African Bambaataa kind of.
Right.
He had like glasses, and he had that koofy type hat on with that leather jacket.
Yeah.
My grandfather was like, what you know about that? And I was like, I don't know. And so, man, I got that record and I hung it up. Hung up the album, the cover.
Okay.
In my room.
Nice.
And it was just like Kumo D in my room, man.
Nice.
And it was just something different.
Okay.
You know? Something different. And you know, he kind of blessed me with that type of stuff. My Uncle Joe too, he was a real big dude on like different music, and he was into like Second to None.
Okay.
Like I told you, the DOC. He was into, even before Dre and all them, like, you know, DJ Quick.
Okay.
Man, dude, blessed. I can go on and on.
Were you able to do these, like, were you able to break at like the family functions?
The cool thing is when my grandfather found out about what I wanted to do, what I was doing, and how good I was like on the verge of being a professional at a young age, 16. I saved my money from working in the garden, and I bought some linoleum. And my grandma said that I could lay it in the garage, glue it. I glued it. So I knew I was in for it. So my uncle and me glued it to the floor,
nice.
And that was my permanent dance area.
Okay.
My mom's garage is still there. My grandmother's garage, excuse me.
Yeah. Cool. You good on time or?
Huh?
Are you good on time or you need to get out?
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Okay. So you guys go down to Radiotron, you see that, you kind of come back to Fresno. What's happening when you come back?
We go back to that competition that they had in Madeira the next day. And we killed everyone.
Okay.
I have footage of that too. The drive we had and the comfortability, I guess.
Okay.
The no. We knew now.
Right.
We knew we were the best that this valley would ever see. We were the Jazzy J and Wicked of the Central Valley.
All right.
We were better. We were stronger. We knew we were going to do something, because I respect Jazzy and Wick, but we knew we were going to be Charles and Pablo, man.
Right.
Yep. And we came back, we won, we took that little $150 home, trophy, and we won every competition ever since then, man.
So what other competitions?
Well, I mean, like Street Rocks, Urban Combat. I mean, you have later on in the 2000s, like, the Wizards threw a few jams that they just orchestrated and fucking cheated, and then it's fucking retarded because they didn't understand the dance, you know, but they, it's just weird. But anyway, we ended up winning their event two or three times. What else did we do? We ended up...
These are all local?
Yeah, I mean, we ended up... But you had a bunch of dudes just trying to be somebody, trying to just put on some type of WWF match with us. And we didn't look at it like that, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, we were actually real... We've been to Europe and back. Like, come on now.
When did that start?
1998. Yeah. Oh, I was already the best champion, like, San Jose, California. I was the best Dynamics champion. Mm. Like, bro, like... I was doing big shit, like,
yeah.
You know, we was traveling to LA, entering the freestyle session, freestyle session 2, that was in 1998, early 98, where I got with Soul Control.
Okay.
And I had known Soul Control since Radiotron 5, and being that, you know, I had respect and love for them, they just loved what we were doing, and just, hey, man, you want to be down with us? I'm like, yeah, man, you know, and just built some type of, like, brotherhood with them.
Was it... Everyone in the crew or just?
Everyone.
Just, no, I mean like anyone.
Oh, me first.
Okay.
Because I told you, man, Pablo, he was great, but he ended up having a baby. So that slowed him down. Okay. And I ended up just going for it, bro.
So Soul Control is in 98?
Yeah, Soul Control, we met them in 1996. And then I ended up getting in 97. I ended up getting in 1997. Pablo 97, and a few other of our members got in like 98. That's kind of how it flowed.
Is Climaxer still going at the time?
Yeah, okay. We're still Climax. We're still Fresno based.
Okay.
You know, but that's our local crew now. Like,
okay.
But when you think about...
were you still battling and stuff as Climax?
Yeah,
or you...
Yeah. But people knew of us as Soul Control too.
Okay.
Because Soul Control loved us. They wanted us, you know? Like, and I wanted to be with them too, you know? But that's how I knew we were going to be able to get out of this city, man.
Yeah.
It's through Soul Control. Because we knew they had our back. We knew that they cared about us. We knew that they looked out for our well-being. And they really respected what we did.
Yeah.
It wasn't a fight like it was out here to be somebody, man. Like, you know, shit. That's deep, man.
Who were the other, so locally, who were the other people that you thought were...
Two great B-boys, man. A few great B-boys. I don't know, like, being from different hoods, you have different ways of looking at things. So, right. Like, you had B-boy Eric.
Okay.
Eric Thurman. You have B-boy Marcio Santos. You have Mikey Lopez. Little Mikey's still in our crew. Eric or Marcio, no. That's just another day, man. That's a story for another day. But two great B-boys, man. Two of the greatest B-boys that Fresno will ever see. Mm. And well-rounded B-boys. They understood the music. They inspired a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you see, that's the difference. I might not like somebody for who they are as a person because of, you know, they don't know how to say them sorry sometimes, or they don't know how to admit to their wrongs. But as a dancer, they're dope.
Right.
They're fucking dope, man. Like, and Eric Thurman, he's from the San Pablo area by Tetsie Wheels. So that was a whole different hood.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, dealing with him, he was like more of like on that other shit, which is like take from your friends type shit. And I didn't play that. And I didn't, you know, the older I got, because he was like 3 years older than me, but the older I got, like, but that's another story, you know, like that's a Climax story, you know, like. As of just doing stuff for the world, doing stuff for the community, like B-boy community as worldwide, Eric has done a lot. And I'll never take that from him because I love his son.
Right.
You know, I'm going to leave a great legacy with him as a dancer. because everything else brother-wise is personal.
Right.
Because he is my brother, but I just don't talk to his ass. You know what I'm saying? But I got to have respect for his work as a B-boy.
Right.
Marcio as well. Little Mikey, dope work. Yeah. Great person. Good family man. Man, you bringing back all the memories, man.
Yeah. What were the, so like the local battles stuff, like who's organizing that?
It's just like a fight, bro.
Yeah.
Nobody, okay, like, so like, you mean like street rocks and urban combats?
Like in, yeah, in Fresno, like when you guys are doing competition.
We did.
Like, so we mean like out of the,
yeah, Climax.
Out of Climax? Okay.
You know, we ended up putting on a lot of great shows. We had this jam called Urban Combat that we introduced the basement, the MC side of the hip-hop culture. We were the only crew at the time with a DJ, a popper, MCs.
Okay.
That's, Flip started out this crew like that. So, man, we're going to have an MC, we're going to have a DJ, and we're going to have B-boys. And that was really rare.
Yeah.
And so that's why we cling to his energy, because...
Was that from the jump, or did that take...
That was from the jump, yeah. And so when we found out, like, how to throw a jam, that was what Marcio was really good at, was throwing events. But he was also a great B-boy, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But Marcio was, like, throwing this thing called Hip Hop in the Park as well at Holmes Playground, Urban Combat. And I think that his artsy side for the events started to come about because he was a graph writer as well. And he was a graph writer too. I'm not gonna let you know the name though.
It's all right.
He was a certain vegetable. We threw the jam street rock or Hip Hop in the Park, and we had graph writers come out and do live pieces. DJs do real expos. Yeah, like DJ F Plus was coming around.
Okay.
Hectic was coming around. I think even 1210 showed up a few times. We had a DJ in our crew called AWAX. Okay. He was part of Scratchy Mentals.
Okay.
With 1210, Hectic, Pre's the homie.
Okay.
You know, that was later on in like the early 2000s, like 2000, right? 2001. But this is when the jam started coming about, like 1999, 2000. And then we threw like Urban Combat. We had some of the graph writers do pieces, throw them up on the walls and hang them, like, and display them like art shows.
Yeah.
And then B-boys would battle, and then DJs would battle. And it was just all hip-hop, man. It was all
culture. What was your model for this?
The culture. We started to kind of bring the culture to Fresno more.
Okay.
And Marcio really helped out with that. And all the B-boys played a role, and being that Pablo was the leader of the crew at the time, because
right.
Flip, we all had a role to play.
Yeah.
And that role to play was, you're going to help. We all get in the car. We all pack up the stuff. We all go and help clean, you know.
When you're doing things like in the park, are you getting, like, do you have to get permission? Or
yeah, got permission.
Okay.
Just from the park, whoever ran the park at the time, which was probably Cliff. Cliff was one of the administrators at Mosqueda Center that ran the area, so Holmes Playground, you know, and a few of the parks in Mosqueda Center. Also, I forgot, was it Debbie, Steve, a few different people, like, I got to find another name, too, but you have to go talk to them, and being, if we get a trial run, like, oh, how do you guys do? We did great, you know, no trouble,
right.
No graph anywhere, just other than the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
Well, they were on board? They, like,
yeah.
There's no pushback? And
no pushback.
It's interesting.
So, and that was dope because Climax crew actually brought the first real, I believe, hip-hop events to Fresno.
Hmm.
And that's why I have a chip on my shoulder, because you're going to respect us.
Right.
Because when it comes to this culture, we thought as a whole, and we gave.
Right.
But at the same time, we still had something to maintain, which was our name. We weren't done. We were young.
Right.
18, 19 years old. We're not no grown folks. And then we started getting more introduced to other people. And people like Hectic was growing in music.
Yeah.
And wanted to be more of an ambassador to this stuff. You had people like Sam Hansen right, who ran FTK,
right,
and he's a big entrepreneur for the area too, because these dudes, they were organized, responsible guys,
right,
and it just started to grow and grow, and then like Hectic was like, hey man, I want to do an event, and I'm like, cool. Sam was like, I'm gonna do a street rock, and then it was more like, you know, bringing the MCs, and everything was just like out of balance now, man.
So are you meeting them at the events?
Yeah.
Or before?
Yeah, because they knew who Climax was. Like, okay. You're working so hard, people started to know who we were now. And then that's when we started to earn some love and respect from them, but then we also started to give it back to them because,
right.
Yo, Hectic was throwing big productions, and so was Sam.
Right.
I mean, the owner of FTK, like, come on, man.
Right.
You know, he's like on the clothing tip, man. He's a really smart dude.
Yeah.
You start, and like I told you, we brought Basement to Street Rock, or no, to Urban Combat at Holmes Playground, or Hip Hop in the Park, one of them. And we're starting to notice there's like crews of MCs.
Mm.
And you had like Reza, Hossein, Sarab, Millen, Marcus Precise.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And then so that inspired like people that couldn't dance anymore, like Flip, to create music.
Gotcha. And so you didn't necessarily know about these folks beforehand.
No. And so I'm like, and so this is like in 98, 99, 2000, 2001, the community started to really come out of its infancy stage and started to grow, started to become some type of adolescent here. You know, or maybe like I would say toddler.
Right.
A toddler type stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and so like, that was like the community was growing, man. And then you had people at the radio station, the Fresno State radio station, like 1210 was doing that.
Okay.
You know, of course everybody knew who Planet Asia was at the time.
Yeah.
You know,
how would you have known Planet Asia? Like, from where?
My sister knew him.
Okay.
Nicole, my aunt. She knew him. Because he wasn't always about, like, you know, like real like MCing. Yeah. He was on some like R&B type shit before. Like have background dancers and stuff, you know, like cross color shit. Right? Remember that?
Yeah, you know, I gotta get this real quick.
Alright.
So what did you first hear? Like, do you remember like when you heard Planet Asia?
Yeah, I think it was on like something Cali Agents. Was it that? Or he was on a Rascal album or something like that, and I heard it. I have the record at home.
But just like heard it around the way? Or?
Yeah, just heard it around the way.
And did you know like he was from Fresno?
I kind of remembered him because my aunt was just like, oh, I work with this dude named so-and-so.
Yeah,
he's from the West, or on the West.
Okay.
And, shit. And then I seen him at one of the park jams.
Okay.
I think he did like a few songs or something. I don't know.
Did he dance?
Who? Me?
Asia?
No. I didn't see that. I didn't see him do that.
I kind of need to get my kid.
Oh, cool. We can do this another time.
Yeah.
Because now we can talk.